This is Jody Stone on the 19th of February, 1988, interviewing William Doolittle at his home on the Interlochen Road in Lakeville. You want to talk about early skiing?
Yes. Is it on?
It's on. Yeah.
Well, I thought I would start out with a very quick run over of the early days of the of skiing in Salisbury, and then the rest of the time talk mostly about the years when I was closely connected with it, which was primarily from the war time, the end of the war, until about the late 1960s. And but I will name a good many names and tell about things that happened in from the point of view of skiers as others as we go along. But I don't think there's much sense in discussing year after year of who won and who did what, because they're all recorded in the papers and places like that.
Right. You want me to turn it off? Okay, we're ready.
The first jumpers came to Salisbury in the early 20s. Don Warner, who lived in the big white house right across from the library, hired a man named John Satry to be a groundskeeper and worker for his place. This was pure luck that it happened that John was a famous ski jumper from Norway, and over the years this little corner of the United States got more and more of the people that followed John. In his own family, his brothers Olaf, Magnus, Sverre and Otar all came along, one after another, and naturally they got to talking and thinking about ski jumping because they'd all been experts in their own country. This spread to some of the local young people, and Rich Parsons especially made the Olympic team in the 30s as a cross-country runner, largely because in the old days to the big prize was always the Nordic prize, and to win that you had to win the jump, you had to win a combined score of the best jumper and the best cross-country runner at that day. The first year there was nothing here to jump on, and John and some of his friends jumped off the roof of a shed down in back of the Warner's house, and they were going 30 feet or something like that. The hill record is now 220, I believe, somewhere around there. The next year, Don Warner saw the interest that his man John and the others who were coming here had in jumping, and they built a jump against the hill in exactly the same place it is now. This was ready for competition on January 1927. And that was the first jump where a few people from out of town came and many others who had come into this general district, particularly Scandinavians. The reinforcements, you might call them, were Ole Hege, who was very famous as a jumper and cross-country runner and was on both the Swedish and the United States Olympic teams. Birger Torreson was also an Olympian from the town of Salisbury, Ole Zetterstrom, who lived in this area, Carl Isaacson, all were Nordic enthusiasts and all got the young men in the town interested in the sports. The downhill group used to race all over the East, Bromley and all of the big state and eastern downhill races. And they were all in the Salisbury Outing Club, which also was a club that the jumpers were members of. These men spread their interests throughout the town, and gradually the town became known as an outstanding place for jumpers. And during the 30s, our hill was well known. People came from out of town to jump on it. And our own people here were very many of them made the 1932 and the 1936 and later Olympic teams. Going back for a moment to the Satre family, who were really the starters of the whole thing, John was killed early in an automobile accident. Magnus, Olaf, and Otar won many, many titles in jumping and cross country and combined, and were on the Olympic team several times. It was an amazing record. One of the interesting things in the early jumps was they were always opened by a double jump, and I've never seen one on TV or anyplace else since then. But always the very first thing in the afternoon, two of the Satres would get to the very top of the in run, quite often Sever and Otar, and they would take off simultaneously, come down the in run side by side, and go through the air side by side and land just as if they had been one jumper, only there were twins practically holding hands in the air. Unfortunately, none of the immediate Satre family are now living, but they've had a very interesting record in the whole area. Sver was a downhill racer as well, and they were all very good. I can remember the old days at Catamount at the end of the afternoon, when two or three of the Satres would go to the top, very top of the steepest part, aim their skis downhill, and just let them run. They never checked, never made a turn until they got to the bottom.
What were they like as people? Did they help younger children get interested in skiing?
They did in a certain way. They were very interested themselves, and the people that they, a few of the boys in town that showed interest and hung around with them, they did a great job in the coaching. Otar was for many years the official junior coach, and he was very good in the job in some ways. The only difficulty was he was a rather shy man, and while he would tell a boy that he'd done well when he did make a nice jump, he would not say a word when the kid made a mistake, and he would turn to me and say he was too far forward, or he didn't hold his head right, or his arms should have been more quiet in the air. And I'd say, tell him, Otar. And he'd say, no, you tell him. And from that point of view, he wasn't a good jumper. But of course, they did start the whole thing in town, and they were the people who at the beginning taught and influenced the Sherwood crowd, Roy and Stubb Sherwood and Bill Schock and Roy's twin brother Bill were all quite good as kids, and the Satres helped them a lot. But later they moved on to be more out in the big field, especially Roy, who went on eventually to be a member of our Olympic team and also national champion.
Tell me about, what do they do other than ski?
Well, they all had jobs around town. They were extremely good masons and had quite a reputation as builders of fine chimneys. Otar was a house painter. And then during the war, several of them were in. I think Magnus must have been too old. And one was killed in the mountains of Italy. I believe that was Olaf. It's very likely that no small town in the United States has ever had as many U.S. Olympic team members as the town of Salisbury. During the war, there were no meets, quite a few of the people from Salisbury, both active in the Salisbury Outing Club, and jumpers and cross-country runners, people like Reese Harris from Williams and Dave Harris from the Yale team, and quite a few other local skiers who were good joined the 10th Mountain Division, and we had quite a strong little group of men from this direction, from this area, who did very well there.
Where did they go? Where did they serve? Italy?
They were pretty well scattered around. I'm sure John Rand, I remember, I knew particularly, and he was in Alaska and then in Burma later with an outfit, and the rest of them, I think I'm right, were all in Italy. The 10th Mountain Division, after its training out at Aspen, or near Aspen, was broken up, and they went two different directions. The after the war, things took quite a change. A great many people came back and were very interested in local affairs and wanted to build up the Salisbury Winter Sports, wanted to build up skiing here again. It had had a lapse pretty much complete throughout the war years. Those of us who were very interested at first were at one time or another officials of the Salisbury Winter Sports Association, as we then began to call it. We weren't all great skiers, but we were all interested in skiing, and we had, of course, the Norwegian contingent to fall back on as far as skill is concerned. But among those who were very active right after the war and getting things going again were Rod Aller, Graham Thompson, Reese and Dave Harris, myself, and
what was, now tell me, while we're talking about Reese and David, the third brother, Harris, what was his name?
I didn't know him. He didn't live here. Reese and Dave, I moved here right after the war, I believe, although their father, I think, lived here before.
Oh, he did?
Okay. I'm not sure about that, but
okay.
I think so.
Okay.
Was to rebuild the Salisbury jump into a somewhat larger jump, which would be eligible for the big meets. This was done in the first year or so, around about 1947. I think the first jumping began in 48. At any rate, the jump was rebuilt to the Fédération Internationale de Ski specifications, and for many years, the only jumps in the East that did meet these specifications, and they could therefore have big championship meets, were Salisbury, Lake Placid, and Brattleboro. This was a very big job and very exciting for all of us, and it was built on exactly the same site as the old jump had been. At the same time, we decided to build some smaller jumps for the juniors. The big jump was rated about a 60-meter jump, although it was perhaps just a little less than that. And then we built a 40-meter jump and a 20-meter jump, which was a good place for the kids to learn on and start to practice. From that time on, the organization of the Salisbury Winter Sports took over handling the juniors, and a good deal of what I say is bound to be about them, because for a great many years, while I had other jobs in the association, my main job was to be vice president and to run the junior program. It was great fun and very hard work. I've got files here about six feet deep almost, it seems like it, and pictures and clippings and so forth of how the kids did in those early years. We, of course, had the club had troubles. It was expensive to build a big jump, and we had difficulties in rivaling Bear Mountain, because their jump was not nearly as good as ours and as big, and they weren't able to have the national titles and that sort of thing, but they did have, the expenses were paid by the state, and therefore it was free, And they did pull off a lot of the New York crowds over there, where all the big jumpers went, but they never particularly liked it because it wasn't quite big enough for them. At any rate, things went along quite well, and we were building up. And then, a few years later, we had a very large blizzard, in the midst of which the hill got soggy, and part of it slid down the mountain. And so we decided to rebuild somewhat bigger, and it was rebuilt then, and the tower, the judge's tower, which is still exactly the same old one, and the various contours and everything were changed and built and made bigger. And for that, from that time on, we had the same jump all the way through the years until fairly recently, which I'll mention later. Pretty soon, the Sherwoods and their pals began to get good. Roy, of course, was the one who stayed with it the best and most, and went on, as I mentioned before, to be on the U.S. Olympic team and to be on the and to be national champion. The junior program was a lot of fun to run, although it was a lot of work, but it was very enthusiastically handled in those days, and we had a great deal of pleasure out of it, and all sorts of people helped on the junior meets, just as the whole town turned out for the big meets to work. I think this is the most outstanding thing of the whole story, as I think back over it, is the way in which people who were really not skiers themselves, or at least not competitive skiers, would turn out and work themselves to death over these jumps. At one time, and the jumps were a good deal bigger numerically than the fields, because a great many of the colleges were interested in ski jumping throughout the 50s and 60s, and just as they will show up with Nigerians on their soccer team, so did they in those days show up with Scandinavians on their ski teams. And when we had a jump at Salisbury, we would always have a fine group of jumpers coming from Middlebury and Dartmouth and all the northeastern colleges, and Williams, excuse me, that's the one. Those were the three that were the main ones then, although later Vermont and New Hampshire and St. Lawrence got into the field. But at any rate, we used to have very big fields of Class A jumpers, and also we had very big groups of local people who worked very hard, even as they do now, to get the hill in shape. But it was harder to get it in shape because we just didn't have quite as good mechanical equipment as we have now. One thing that kept us from having to cancel quite often was if we had some bad luck on the snow, we would buy ice and collect ice from ponds and have it stored there. One year, the statistics I have for one year, we had a purchase and cut off ponds. We had 100 tons of ice, and we had, and farmers would lend us machines in which we would chop it up. And then through hay blowers that the farmers used to blow hay up into the attics of the lofts of their barns, we would blow this chopped up ice up onto the landing hill and onto the tower itself. We couldn't blow it all the way up, so the last half of the tower up, we carried this chopped ice up in bushel baskets. And you can imagine guys like George Kiefer working their heart out, and we always had a gang from Salisbury School in Hotchkiss helping us, and so that was really a turnout. And we had ticket takers, we had people providing the food that we sold at the bottom of the hill, and then you always had to have a bunch of measurers along the side of the hill and measuring where the jumpers' feet hit. And they were on one side, and on the other side was a long rope in which probably 20 or 25 local skiers including boys from the local schools, would stand there on their skis, quite often not downhill skis, and if the hill got torn up by a fall or anything like that, they would move out holding onto the rope so it wouldn't, so that they would could stay upright on such a steep place, and footpack the snow where the hole had been. They'd shovel some fresh snow in, and then these trampers, as they call them, would tramp up and down and get it nice and smooth again before the first jumper. Which brings up one of the funniest things that I think I've ever seen in my life, and luckily no one was hurt, and the crowd got a great deal of amusement out of it, but it was, and it was weird to watch, but it did slow up the meet for about an hour until we got the repairs made. In the one day of the Nationals, of all things, which I'll talk about in more detail later, but anyhow, somebody fell pretty well up the hill, made a big gouge in the snow, and so they stopped the jumping, and out came this gang of 20 or 25 packers to flatten out the hill. Suddenly, the rope broke, and there they were, you can imagine it, on this tremendously steep slope, and somebody started to slide into the next one, and one fell, and then they all fell, and slowly, like in a slow motion movie, a crowd of 25 people in skis came very, very slowly down the hill in a huge mass. As I say, nobody was hurt, but you can imagine the condition of the hill by that time. So we had to get everybody out with shovels and spread the snow evenly and then repack it. And as I remember it, the whole thing took about an hour, but everybody was pretty well amused. Not just the crowds, because the people involved in it couldn't believe what was happening to them, and it was really quite a sight. I want to jump for a moment, for a while, it is, to the junior program, because as I say, this was my part in the thing I think I've liked most of all the things I've done in the community. Besides run the school, which was my job. But as the Sherwood gang got better and moved on into the upper levels of skiing, there came along a bunch of juniors about whom I have many memories and very bright ones in the fun of it. Among them in these years, boys that I remember the best, and unfortunately I'm not going to remember everybody, but Harold Jones, I think, was the best of the crowd, young Harold Jones. His father had been a downhill skier, and he was a very, very good skier with good promise, and unfortunately his career was interrupted by the war. And then he had a bad accident and never got back into it. The second best, I think, of all the bunch we had at that time, and these were not all competing exactly the same years. I'm talking now of the years pretty much from after the war until the middle 60s. Mark Audie, I think, was the second best of the group. And then we would just put in together Jim Beckett, Paul Satry, Tommy Atkins, Dave Holmes, Bill Doolittle, Peter Beckett, and Dave Harris. There were many others, but these, I guess, were the ones I knew best. At least I remember them best. I have some statistics about these. I've said I wouldn't say much about statistics, but I do want to cover something about the junior record during those years, if you'll stay with me for a moment.
Okay.
Just as an example of the sort of things that were going on in the juniors in the 50s, I would like to read one of my annual reports on junior competition, which I made to the directors of the Salisbury Winter Sports Association. The first large junior meet held by the Salisbury Winter Sports Association was in the winter of 1950. This initial effort was a great success, with 90 competitors in several age classes in cross country, jumping, and slalom. almost all were local boys or were local schools, or were from local schools. Later, the meets expanded to include boys from all over the East. I want to put in a little bit of an aside on this, because my wife Connie and I were running this meet, or supposed to be, and Rod Aller was really running it, but we were supposed to be record keepers and clerks of the meet. So Rod said to us, "Do you know how to score a ski meet?" And it was the most complicated thing you've ever seen. And I said, "No, I don't know how to score a ski meet, but I know how to score a track meet, and I don't see why we shouldn't be able to score this the same way and get perfectly happy results." Well, this may be a world's record based on what meets I've known, but as I said, we had 90 competitors. Most of them took part in three events, and we had four age classes. We ran through the whole thing in one afternoon, scored them like a track meet with five for first, three for second, and one for third, and got all the figuring out done by dark, and the kids were standing around. We gave out the ribbons, and the whole thing was over in one afternoon, which I think must be a world record for a meet of that size. To get back to the report. From 1951 on, the association was scheduled and sanctioned by the U.S. Eastern The association was scheduled USEASA sanctioned junior Nordic meets, jumping and cross country every single year. Only once in 1959 was the weather forced us to give up. Though often the efforts made by the members to produce proper competitive conditions for the boys have had to be extremely strenuous. During these years, our meets have been the Connecticut State Championships all but one time, and three times these meets have been Junior Eastern Championships. In junior competition, there have always been several age classes. Currently, these are 17, 16, 15, 14, 13, 12, and under 12. Therefore, boys can be champions in their appropriate age classes for several years. From 1950 through 1963, Salisbury Winter Sports Juniors have won the following Nordic Championship first place trophies. Connecticut State jumping 18 firsts. Connecticut State cross country 14. Connecticut State combined 14. New York State jumping 7. New York State cross country 5. New York State combined 5, Eastern Championship jumping 5, cross country 3. In considering the quality of these wins, it should be remembered that our state championships are not limited to state residents, but are competed for eagerly each year by from 60 to 100 youngsters from all over the East. As SWASA facilities consist only of our three jumps and our cross-country trails, the Nordic events have been emphasized, and the records on these are more complete. However, many of our juniors have also been active in downhill and slalom, the alpine events. We have had two Connecticut State and two Eastern four-way champions, one Connecticut State downhill champion, one Connecticut State combined girl champion, and numerous prep school and college team members. Of these, at least five have been prep school and three college ski team captains. Particularly fine Nordic records were made by two boys. Harold Jones, 10 times a winner in Connecticut State Championships, twice in Eastern Championships, was four times a member of the Eastern team at the Junior Nationals, placing 8th, 5th, 7th, and 17th in the Nordic combined in succeeding years. Mark Otte was six times the Connecticut State winner, five times Eastern champion, and placed third in combined in the Junior Nationals. This year, the Connecticut State Jumping and Cross Country Junior Championships were held on February 2nd with the largest field ever, 110 entrants from Vermont, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, and Connecticut. The Cross Countries was held on part of the new course laid out in preparation for the men's Eastern Championships February 15th. The jumping was on the 20-meter hill for all boys, sudden change in the weather in the mid-afternoon caused the 40-meter hill to ice up and become too dangerous. This was a great disappointment, as we had some good jumpers there, but the jumping record that particular day really doesn't amount to anything. That's the end of that report. I might mention that the junior program slipped away, and we didn't have very much Nordic success here in the town for a few years. Part of it was the fact that the Satries and that gang who used to dominate the big time skiing from the area were getting too old to be active. We didn't have very good coaches available, unfortunately. They just weren't in the town. And another thing that hampered us was that we couldn't get a right-of-way to put electric lights in and to use the hill in the evening for practice for the boys. And you practically have to have an electrically lit hill because all your good coaches have jobs, and they can't get down there to coach the kids unless you can do it at night. Lake Placid had probably the best junior program throughout the last 30 or 40 years in junior jumping, and they always had a hill near the town which was lighted up at night, and they had a very good bunch of kids. And the same to a certain extent was true of Brattleboro also. Gradually, in recent years, the Salisbury Winter Sports Association has gotten extremely active again, done a good job, and we now have a very good bunch of young kids coming up, and a very good program for all sorts of skiers, both Nordic and Alpine. I won't go into that because as time has passed, I've been less active myself and haven't done much with the juniors. In fact, I haven't done a great deal with the skiing at all, just simply because younger people have taken over. So I won't say much more about the juniors. However, I do want to go back and mention some of the high points in our grown-up program, our program for the senior jumpers. The Salisbury Winter Sports used to give them travel money, and they were very good. The biggest thing we had was the national championships in 1952. That was a great feather in our cap, and we had a great many people, of course, from all over the United States, and a very fine competitive meet. It went off very well, and we were all very pleased with it. It was won by Clarence Hill from the Midwest, and the next big event we had was in 1959, when the Olympic team tryouts were held on our jumping hill, which incidentally was named in honor of Magnus Satry. The hill was at that time dominating a good deal of the eastern jumping, particularly, and also big people in the national jumping were Art Tokel from Lake Placid, from New Jersey, Art Devlin from Lake Placid, and Roy Sherwood from Salisbury. Roy was on the 1956 Olympic team, and Art Devlin was winning here on all the big meets in around the early 50s. In addition, just a little earlier, Muzzy Barber won a meet here, but the prize was given to Art Tokel because Muzzy had been giving lessons and was considered to be a pro. However, he kept on jumping and was a great influence on the early Lake Placid jumpers as well as some of the local people. The in talking about the big jump, I have failed to mention that in recent years, due to certain changes in the designs put out by the National Association for jumping hills, and also to make it a better hill and a safer hill, our hill here in Salisbury was once more rebuilt a few years ago. And while it is rather a small jump compared to some of those in use nowadays, it's still considered a very good jump, and it is usually popular with the jumpers. I'd like to put in here a couple of entirely personal things about my work with the Salisbury Winter Sports Association. As I mentioned earlier, it's something that has meant a lot to me, and I've been very pleased with the way it's gone. But of course, there are always a few funny little things, as well as other things that you want to mention. For quite a few years, I was also, in addition to the junior work, I was also the announcer on the hill. One of the things that happened there, it was an extremely cold day, and the announcer was up in the judges stand along with the judges, and up came Carl Isaacson climbing up the stairs with a great big steaming pot full of something that smelled awfully good, and when he came to the top, it was some sort of hot mulled wine that he spread around amongst the working force of judges, and I had the pleasure of being involved in that. That was kept quiet among those in the judges' stand that day. However, one equally cold day, I was announcing, and I had the mic open without realizing it, and so all through the town they heard the words from Doolittle, "My God, it's cold up here. Where's that jug? Pass it to me." Another interesting little thing was connected with my wife, Connie. She was, for a great many years, chief computer. In those days, we had very little mechanical in the way of mechanical computers to help out. In fact, a small hand adding machine was about as close as we got. The computers worked very hard in the cold and tried to keep up with the things, but usually it took about an hour after the meet was over down in the office of the Tri-State Corporation, which was near the jump, when all the computers and the judges would all stay there and work get the final figures and doubly verify all the scores and then bring them up to the town hall where a party was going on, and the young jumpers from all over the East would be there waiting to get their prizes. But there was a junior state jump one time down southeast of here, I've forgotten which town, but they had a pretty nice little jump, and they used to have occasionally had junior meets there. Almost always the Salisbury jump. Salisbury was the state championship meet of the Connecticut ski group. However, during this jump, there was suddenly a break in the competition, and there was quite a delay, and they kept saying over the loudspeaker, "Well, just a moment until we get this straightened out," and so forth. And finally, over the loudspeaker, and they knew she probably was in the stand because my son Bill was jumping that day. Finally, over the loudspeaker came the announcement, "If Mrs. Doolittle is in the crowd, will she please come to the judge's stand and straighten us out?" Which was a nice kudu for the head computer from Salisbury. Needless to say, she did come and straighten them out. And I think Bill won the meet, which was, I hope, not due to her straightening. Almost all the jumpers were put up by friends and people around the town, and to a considerable extent that is still true. For several years, Art Devlin and Art Tokel, who were leading jumpers of those days, has stayed with me at Indian Mountain School, and they had a, and the kids had a great thrill out of seeing them at breakfast and seeing such famous jumpers on hand. The Lake Placid gang in the juniors used to arrive with a big beaten up old bus, and they had about 25 kids in it. So you can see they didn't neglect anybody in town up there who wanted to be a ski jumper. This brings me pretty much to the end of the things I wanted to say today, although the names of a great many who did a great deal have been left out, and perhaps I can make some lists and add that to this some other time. I do want to come back and stress something that I mentioned earlier in closing, and that is the way the town turned out over the years and is still doing so for volunteer work. Work, washouts, snowouts, freezeouts, still the Salisbury Winter Sports Association has gone on with an amazing number of the town helping on memberships, on working on the hill, and everybody's been willing to lend a hand. George Kiefer is one of the great people on that, and has probably been at it longer than almost anybody else in town. But I can't possibly go into them all. The Salisbury Winter Sports Association has always been in debt, but we have gradually worked out of that and gotten the hills paid for, and occasional big crowds have been a great help to us. It's been a great big event annually for both the seniors and for the juniors. Why everyone works so hard is difficult to say, but it's a great thrill to see the weekend go off well year after year. And it's a town-wide effort of which Salisbury can be proud.